Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're talking about the new debate over listing the polar bear as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. It would be the first animal listed as a result of global warming. And now we'll get a bit of debate on the issue. What would the classification really mean to the polar bear? And is it really an end run around the Bush administration's pro-business stance and skeptical stance on the environment and global warming in particular? I'm joined by Jason Brune, Executive Director of the Resource Development Council for Alaska, a pro-business advocacy organization, and by Bob Irvin, Senior Vice President of Conservation Programs at Defenders of Wildlife, an environmental group. And we can take your phone calls on this. How much are you willing to do here in the New York area to protect the polar bear? 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692 or email Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Jason Brune, Bob Irvin, welcome to WNYC. Hello.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Jason, we've heard that there's strong evidence that the polar bear's habitat is threatened by melting ice. We just heard it from our guests from the U.S. Geological Survey. In that case, why shouldn't it be listed as threatened by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service?
You know, since thanks again for the opportunity to be on the show this morning, Brian. Still bright or dark and really early here in Anchorage, but I'm happy to be here. The polar bear population, since this trend in decreasing sea ice, has actually gone from about 8,000 animals to around 25,000 animals today. So it's basically increased threefold since the late 60s, and you know, all of this is occurring during a trend of warming temperatures and decreasing sea ice. You know, if you were to look at it, in fact, this population increase has happened at the same time that oil has flowed from the North Slope of Alaska down to Valdez. So, you know, we see the populations actually as healthy in both size and distribution, and to list them under the Endangered Species Act just as an improper use of the act.
Well, just on that basic point of fact, Bob Irvin, do you agree? It sounds like he disagrees with the guests we had on just a minute ago, the scientists from the Geological Survey, who said the polar bear population is decreasing. Do you two not even agree on whether polar bears are increasing or decreasing in number?
Well, I'm actually surprised that we don't agree, because it's very clear that, in fact, polar bears are in trouble. Around the world, five of the world's 19 polar bear populations are clearly in decline. What we're seeing among the populations worldwide is a decrease in body weight, a decrease in the survival of cubs. And all of this has been tied to the decline in packed sea ice resulting from global warming. And that's why the bear has been proposed for listing as a threatened species, because of the present and expected destruction of its habitat that it needs to survive.
Are you citing different statistics that are competing statistics about increasing total number but pressure on the cubs? I mean, I'm still trying to understand and trying to help our listeners understand the basic facts here. So are polar bears increasing or decreasing?
Well, in much of the world, they are decreasing, and there are indications, even among populations that haven't shown immediate signs of decreasing, there are other indications that are precursors to that decrease, and that is the decline in survivorship of cubs and declines in body weight. And what there can absolutely be no dispute about is that the polar bear's habitat is absolutely melting away as a result of global warming.
Jason, one more time on that.
You know, if you look at the trends since the 60s, you know, I'm focusing on a long range. Polar bears lived 30 to 40 years, and you have a population that since the 60s has increased worldwide from 8,000 to 25,000. You know, obviously recently there, you know, two are some of the species around, or the populations around the Canada have decreased, but also some have increased. So to say that that impact is having a negative impact on all the polar bear populations is simply false.
We have a caller who has a question relevant to what you've just been discussing, so let's take him. Chris in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have a question and a comment, actually. My question is, first, where can we view these studies? You know, there are obviously two conflicting studies. And where can we see those studies and actually see the sort of, you know, research that was done? Because, you know, I mean, for instance, the tobacco companies, you know, they have studies that have shown that, you know, cigarettes don't cause cancer. So, you know, I want to know who did the studies, where the studies were done, and what the intent of the study was.
Okay.
And my comment is, you know, largely we have, you know, two groups of people, you know, one who are largely pro-hunting and, you know, who are usually well-financed, and also we have, you know, conservationists who are usually, you know, not well-financed. So, you know, those two groups are obviously coming up with, you know, different points of view, but, you know, it's...
Well, I'm not sure it's the hunters involved in this case, as opposed to oil companies and Alaska economic development interests, but we will put that comment and question to our guests. But, Bob, can you give Chris an answer as to where the public can view these studies for themselves?
Sure. One of the best places to go is to look at the proposal itself that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has put out there. And you can find that at the Fish and Wildlife Service webpage, which is www.fws.gov. And if you go, they have an endangered species page, and you can find the proposal to list the polar bear as well as information about the basis for the proposal there. Another good site to go to is the Defenders of Wildlife site, defenders.org. We have information on both global warming and the polar bear, including a report that we issued in December entitled Navigating the Arctic Meltdown, Polar Bears, and focusing specifically on the issue of polar bear declines and what needs to be done not only immediately to address the causes of global warming, but also to get polar bears through the bottleneck of the next 100 years of impacts from global warming.
Jason, same question. Do you want to list an alternative site where people can check this stuff out? And is hunting an issue here?
First of all, I thought the sites that were given were perfect. Obviously, you know, going to the heart with the Fish and Wildlife Service is the key. You know, and ultimately, my organization, you know, we acknowledge that polar bear habitat through the melting of sea ice may be decreasing. It's using the Endangered Species Act to list the bears when they are healthy in size and distribution, which makes us nervous that, you know, what this is ultimately going to lead to is critical habitat designation. It's going to lead to impacting Alaska businesses when clearly they have been able to coexist with industry here in Alaska. I guess I would state with respect to the Defenders website, there is some good information on there, but their action alert specifically on polar bears indicates that and I'll just quote it, essential protections against harmful oil and gas drilling in ANWR, Bristol Bay, and other crucial habitat areas must be provided to ensure the survival of polar bears. Well, polar bears don't even exist in Bristol Bay. ANWR, obviously, they're thriving in ANWR, and it just makes me a little nervous referring people to a clearly biased site like the Defenders website.
My guest on WNYC, Jason Brune, who was just speaking, Executive Director of the Resource Development Council for Alaska, a pro-business advocacy group, and Bob Irvin, Senior Vice President of Conservation Programs at Defenders of Wildlife, an environmental group, as we discussed the proposal to list polar bears as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act, the first such species that would be listed as a result of global warming. Bob, the website for the Center for Biological Diversity, which started this process, is pretty straightforward about its aim. And let me read this. Quote, "The polar bear's protected status will require a new level of environmental review before oil and gas development continue in polar bear habitat in the American Arctic. Even more critically, because it is illegal to harm threatened species or jeopardize their survival, the polar bear listing could mean that all U.S. industries emitting large quantities of greenhouse gases and requiring a federal permit to do so will come under the purview of the Endangered Species Act," unquote. So, Bob, wow. they're saying this decision, and they want this decision, to have wide-ranging implications for any industry in America that emits greenhouse gases, technically to protect the polar bears under the Endangered Species Act.
Well, I can't speak for the Center for Biological Diversity. I think it's premature to talk about the sweep or potential sweep of impacts on any particular industry. The real question at this point is, as a matter of biology and ecology, does the polar bear merit listing under the Endangered Species Act? And the Fish and Wildlife Service clearly thinks, at least at this stage, that it does, because it is proposed to list it. And when you look at the criteria under the Act, it's pretty clear that it does as well. I mean, one of the
right. But let me follow up, because the implication here is that this is a backdoor way to change overarching U.S. industrial policy, maybe like the snail darter of decades gone by. You know, this one little backdoor route in the law to get the polar bears listed as a threatened species, and that's going to affect how we consume gas and oil and everything else here in New York and everywhere else in America, and that would be the legal wedge to do it.
So, well, I don't regard it as a back doorway. I think it's actually going in through the front door, which is there's probably no better example of the impacts of global warming than the impacts on polar bears. Literally, their ice habitat is melting away.
But why wouldn't front doorway be to say, you know, as Al Gore does in An Inconvenient Truth, that there are massive implications for humanity and the entire planet, and here are some of them, and we have to stop them through these kinds of processes. That would be more front door and direct, wouldn't it?
Well, we're doing all of those things. I mean, the conservation community, industry itself, have all I think, brought to the fore the idea that global warming is having an enormous impact on wildlife and on humans around the world, and it's time to act to address that. We need to immediately act to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. In addition to that, though, we also need to take steps to reduce the other stresses on polar bears and other wildlife so that, in fact, they can survive the impacts of global warming.
Jason, do you want to react to that?
Brian, I think you expressed my sentiments exactly. A recent Wall Street Journal
article. I was just asking a question, but go ahead.
We feel that this is a backdoor way of limiting greenhouse gas emissions, and my organization feels that if this is going to be done, it should be done through the front door. It should be debated openly in Congress, with a majority obviously being Democrats. Now there's obviously a new opportunity for this to occur. We've seen far too often how, through the Endangered Species Act, a lot of land is locked up through the back door. A lot of industry is impacted significantly through the back door, with most likely no additional help or positive impact to species. I mean, over the history of the Endangered Species Act, I believe less than 10 species have actually been recovered. And, you know, that's less than 1% of the total species listed under the Endangered Species Act, and it just proves it's not working, and all it's doing is causing unneeded delays for development and really no additional benefits for the species.
But why shouldn't my listeners consider your group selfish deniers? The governor of Alaska hasn't decided yet whether to support the listing or not. The governor was sounding very skeptical at the hearings this week, but the head of the Fish and Game Service there also seems to question the science, along with Senator Inhofe from Alaska, one of the last holdouts, disagreeing with the basic science on global warming. Why shouldn't we see this as a local, political, and corporate act of denial on your part and your colleagues' part?
The numbers speak for themselves. Industry has been we take the environment very seriously here in Alaska. I mean, that's why we all came here in the first place. And we've proven through polar bear populations, through caribou populations, which have increased 11-fold since oil and gas development on the North Slope, that industry can coexist. We wouldn't be living here if we didn't enjoy the beauty. And I think, you know, there's a new trend out there. It's not the NIMBY philosophy, not in my backyard. It's not in Alaska's backyard. People in your neck of the woods like to know that there's a place like Alaska out there where no development, where they can do anything they can to stop development from occurring. And, you know, we have to have our opportunities for economic development up here as well, and we do it better than anyone in the world. I challenge anyone to say that we don't.
And I have read that the oil and gas industry in Alaska is hoping to start a new economic boom there with a new pipeline to the mainland. So you have an interest to deny or minimize the global warming science because of your immediate economic interest. Is that not accurate?
You know, like I indicated, it's not that we're denying the global warming science. What we're focusing on is the numbers of the species, and that's really, there's an increase of threefold since the 60s.
So last thing, and then we're going to speak to the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service, which proposed listing the polar bear as officially threatened. Bob Irvin, what do you think it would take if it is listed as officially threatened for it to be adequately protected? What would the law then require of any American individual or corporation or the government if we actually get to that point?
Well, the Endangered Species Act provides some basic protections. It prohibits anyone from taking a listed species, which means killing it or injuring it, harassing it or harming it, and that may include certain types of habitat destruction. It also requires federal agencies to consult with the Fish and Wildlife Service to ensure that their actions are not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of the polar bear.
So would that be everything from coal-fired power plants in Ohio on out?
Well, the exact scope of actions that would be subject to consultation will have to be worked out, you know, on a case-by-case basis. I think clearly there's a rule of reason about how connected an activity is to impacts on polar bears. But consultation has been around since virtually the beginning of the Endangered Species Act for at least 20, 25 years, and has worked very well. Most federal actions go forward after consultation, maybe with some modification. What it is it's a yellow light. It tells federal agencies to stop and think about the impacts of their actions on endangered species. And certainly in the case of a species like the polar bear, whose habitat is melting away as a result of global warming, it's certainly time for us all to exercise a little caution, a little precaution, and do what we can to protect this magnificent species.
Bob Irvin, Jason Bruhn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.